Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair, and I am broadcasting live, unscripted, and unrehearsed from the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 on the FM band. And streaming live from Singapore in one side of the world all the way to the Kingdom of Sweden. And the other side of the world, live, and as always, I come to you every week with from those broadcast positions. We're working with a new panel, and there is some question as to how well it's working for other than he who sits in the captain's chair. But I am watching the little needles bounce back and forth. They're telling me that I am indeed going out onto the air, and that the panel is an Arrakis Systems Inc. And the first warning label is do not use wet wipes. The voice of Vashon is in no danger of the captain using wet wipes on this or hardly anything else either. My greetings today go out to all great grandparents. Over the weekend, I had four generations, myself, my son, my grandson, and my great-grandson. And it is easy for you to say, Captain Joe, how could you possibly have a great-grandson? Henry was born just a few days after Mary R. died and is the first of my and our great-grandchildren. And it is a great thing to be able to have some extra years to enjoy being the head of four generations. So my greetings go out to all of you great-grandparents, and here I am coming up celebrating my 50th birthday, coming in November. I have booked the both sets of quarters out at Point Robinson for the event, and I'm looking around for a place here on the island where I can have an island-wide celebration, celebration by those who are happy that we have been given a few extra years together, and celebration for those who are bemused that my expiration date has come and long gone in my wake. The binnacle list today is a sad one in that one of my oldest, longest-standing friends and colleagues in the Coast Guard has crossed his own bar. Captain Ray Copen was a brown shoe, an aviator, and 2 years behind me at the Coast Guard Academy. The academy years, which are 2 years apart, have a special bond because when one enters the academy as a fourth classman, a SWAB, he is taken in hand by the second class, in civilian parlance, the juniors. And so there is a special relationship between those two classes, but Captain Copen and I went even beyond that because in my first command in San Diego, I was the captain of a patrol cutter And my immediate boss was the group commander, who was a captain by the name of Captain Lauren H. Seeger. Captain Seeger's nickname in the Coast Guard was the Topper. And the Topper was a challenging senior person for this very junior captain to serve. And Ray was one of his line pilots. During the time that I was the captain of that particular vessel, we had a little bit of a bending of steel in which the bow of my cutter bumped up against the lower platform of the accommodation ladder of a merchant ship that I had gone aboard to be a part of the boarding party. And the inevitable investigation, Captain Copen, then a lieutenant and a line pilot working for the Topper, was designated to be the investigating officer. So later, many years later, I was assigned here in Seattle as the chief of operations, all Coast Guard operations in the Pacific Northwest. And my immediate boss was Captain Copen, who was the chief of staff for the 13th Coast Guard District. And so his crossing of the bar strikes me in a very personal way for a couple of reasons, which I have outlined. The fact that he was a brown shoe and I am a black shoe. He was an aviator, naval aviator, and I, of course, was a ship driver. Had nothing to do with the warmness of our relationship over the many years. Ray, you were a good friend, colleague, and I will miss knowing that you are there where we will cross at a change of command. Because it no longer will happen. I also am including, of course, the Port of Baltimore, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what is happening in the Port of Baltimore as a separate item, but I am continuing the Port of Baltimore on the binnacle list, and in particular, Captain Joe's people who have had joint replacements that have not gone quite as well as everybody had hoped. I've had calls in this last week from a couple of Captain Joe's people who are in that situation. And I'm hopeful that their being in the palm of my hand will, along with whatever therapy their physician is prescribing, whatever particular magic elixir they are using, maybe one even cannabinoid-based, is going to give them the relief that they need. And finally, I put His Majesty King Charles and Her Royal Highness the Princess of Wales, the monarchy of my much-loved United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. May everyone on the binnacle list feel better, work their way through whatever it is that they need to do to become better so that they indeed get to leave the binnacle list. Speaking of binnacle lists, I also have to include my little black cat Blossom that nobody else wanted but me. And she is undergoing a number of tests because my vet believes that maybe she has a cancer. If she does, she's not showing any of it to me. She is bouncing around and behaving as if she were a 3-year-old cat instead of one who may be 14 or 15 years old. The Port of Baltimore has the captain of the port, who is in charge of the, that is his port. He is the Coast Guard officer who is charged with the safety and Not the operation, of course, that's done by the Port Authority. But he is charged with the safety, the safe operation, and the safety of the port itself. He's doing, so far as I can tell, and just watching all of the things that are going on, he's doing, I think, a really wonderful job. As of this afternoon, as of today, as of yesterday afternoon, he had been able to open up a shallow draft channel, and the first cargo, which was a fuel barge, was able to go around the wreck site, the elision site. And although this is not a very deep draft channel, it is right now the controlling depth is 11 feet at mean low or low water. Even so, that means that at least some traffic can start to move. And what it also means is that the plan that was constructed a long time ago for just such contingencies is working the way that the captain of the port designed it. It is a plan which operates under the name of a unified command. In this particular case, the unified commander is the captain of the port, a Coast Guard captain. One may wonder, some of you may wonder, why have we not started to unload the ship and get those containers moving on their way? And in fact, why haven't we lifted all of that steel off of her and gotten her out of the way so that the fairway can be reopened? She was loaded down with over 4,000, looked to me like most of them 40-foot containers. And each one of those containers has a weight, and it has a center of gravity. And as each one of those containers is moved, that changes the overall center of gravity of the vessel itself. As each one of those containers is lifted off, and as each one of those pieces of steel is lifted off, very careful calculations of cause and effect have to be made, because the cranes that are doing the lifting are under contract to the Navy Sea Systems Command. But if one of those pieces of steel or one of those containers are lifted off and everything shifts, and the whole thing goes farther south, the captain of the port, this Coast Guard, my brother captain, is responsible. It is his plan. It is his port. And all of these things have to be done under his jurisdiction and his leadership. I had predicted that when I was asked, how long, Captain Joe, do you think it will be before we can start moving anything through back and forth into and out of the Port of Baltimore? And I said, I believe that they'll be able to do it within a week. And here, this captain of the port has been able to do it in less time than that. So I am resisting, and it's not hard for me to do it. I'm resisting making any speculation as to why all of this happened. I read the headlines. The headline on the Sunday Seattle Times said something about a mystery. The big mystery is, why did the ship lose power? We're going to figure that out. We'll figure out all of these things, and they become no mystery. They become actually probably either a personnel failure or an equipment failure or both, probably an element of both. And the question of the tugs and why were the tugs cut loose when they were, All of those questions will be answered, and I am not going to be a participant in any of the speculation. I will report to you, as you are entitled to expect from me, just what I know, both from my own experience and from what I can see from the official reports. And on that, do you have my hand? In the meantime, this is moving along in an incredibly professional and careful way so that there is no further headed south of either the container ship itself or any of those pieces of steel. In the meantime, a lake carrier, the American Mariner, hit the Mud Lake Junction light on the 28th of March. This one's particularly close to my heart because Mud Lake, whose real name is Munascong, and I've never gotten the pronunciation of that right because it's always Mud Lake, is just to the south of my headquarters compound in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. It was part of my jurisdictional area when I was the group commander there, and is part of the upbound routing for vessels that are headed to Lake Superior. In this case, probably she was headed to Duluth. How did she hit the junction light, which is a fixed aid, it's not a buoy, is also yet to be determined. But here we are with this big ship. And in the case of the American Mariner, there were no people that were lost. We always grieve for those that are lost in any kind of maritime aviation accident. And we are particularly conscientious about finding out the why and the where and the who and all of the things that went into the sequence of events that go into any accident, whether it be maritime or aviation. In the meantime, good things are happening on Red Hill. Red Hill, of course, is the area just below Tripler Army Hospital on the hills of back above Pearl Harbor and the harbor of Honolulu. It's where the fuel that was in the huge tanks leached into the aquifer under those tanks and contaminated the water supply. It caused the establishment of a task force headed up by, of all things, a Navy three-star, a vice admiral. And Vice Admiral Wade took the tiller, in his sturdy hands, and he gets another one of today's Bravo Zulu because they were able to move over 100 million gallons of fuel safely and without any further contamination and moved it into tank ships, which then moved it to other storage facilities outside of the Hawaiian Islands. So Wade is so confident that they are in the right place at the right time and that there's not going to be any more leaching that he has turned this to a Navy two-star who is in charge of all Navy facilities in the Hawaiian Islands. It must be honestly reported, however, that not all of the people who live around Red Hill are as confident as Admiral Wade, my three-star. And they are continue to be concerned. I am sending a signal out here in Hawaiian. I would in Hawaiian if I spoke Hawaiian. It'll happen. This admiral, the one to whom the task has been turned over, the Navy two-star, is going to be incredibly conscientious and careful to make sure that not a single drop of any of the residual fuel that's still in the system will leach into the water supply. I wish that I had good news to report about the ongoing Coast Guard icebreaker saga, and I do not. A piece came to me during the week, and my brother, retired icebreaker captains, of whom there are several fairly close aboard and with whom I had a personal and professional for many, many years. There are not many of us in the world who are icebreaker captains, you know. And so we tend to stick together, and we tend to be very critical when the need is there for new ships and new commands, and it's not happening. The first of what the Coast Guard has chosen to call the Polar Security Cutter. I don't know why they did that. Anyway, full power. The first one is supposed to be under construction in the Gulf. And so far, they have built a couple of the modules which will go into the ship. And I can't even remember the name that has been assigned to her. It's one that I have rejected mentally and emotionally, because the person who decided on the naming of the ship picked some new name and did not use any of it. Have been such honorable and happily give my anyway. Several of these modules have been constructed, and the official position is that this is to test the welding of the special steel. Now, we've been building icebreakers out of steel since 1900s. The Russians built the first of the what we would call traditional icebreakers, Yermak, in about 1912. And we've been building them out of metal for over 100 years. And so that we are going through this exercise, and now I am not sure that I'm going to live long enough to see the first of the Coast Guard heavy icebreakers in commission. In the meantime, Polar Star continues to sail her on. Polar Star has completed her mission in Antarctica and should be home soon. I haven't checked her position, so I don't know whether she's actually over at the Coast Guard base at Pier 36. But Polar Star and her sister, Polar Sea, is in the berth area at, she's berthed at the Coast Guard base, and she's sitting there. And one of the things that is in the Coast Guard appropriations bill for this year, this fiscal year, which ends on the end of September, the new fiscal year begins in October, is to re-examine her hull and see whether or not it can be reused. And I would be delighted to be part of a team to do a real thorough inspection of her and get down into every single one of her compartments and find out whether the hull itself is sound and whether some re-engineering could be done. I think that we, the Coast Guard, gave up on her far too soon. In the meantime, there's also money in the current appropriation to buy what is essentially an oil rig servicing ship. Ice strengthened, built to work around oil rigs that are in ice-laden waters. This is not a true icebreaker. She's not built to military standards. She is right now under charter to the Australian Antarctic Program, And I believe that right now she's physically located someplace in around the Antarctic continent, probably over on the peninsula side, which, by the way, is where the Wobble Glacier is, should you want to check on how the Wobble Glacier is doing. I did it the other day. Somebody asked me about this, and I said, well, let's look it up, and we did. The Wobble Glacier is thriving. It is covered by ice and snow. There is no deterioration that I can see. So the Coast Guard is going to buy at about $125 or probably more, but certainly the base price is about $125 million. And then we're going to make some changes and modifications to her. One of the modifications that I would make, if I were given the opportunity, and Commandant Fagan, my sea bag is packed, should you want to put me back on active duty, I'd be happy to take over the modifications for this ship. That she has this excrescence up on the bow, which is her helo deck. I cannot imagine going through a Pacific typhoon and have that thing survive. So somehow or other, that deck's got to be moved aft and a hangar of some sort constructed. But anyway, she is right now the plan is that she's going to be home ported in Alaska. That's where she's going to work. And I wish everybody well. And, of course, my envy is complete that somebody else and not your Captain Joe is going to command her. My next trip coming up here in the month of April is I'm going to New Orleans to a meeting of the Council of American Master Mariners, an organization of which I've been a member for many years. And so next week I will be broadcasting from here. The week after that I will be broadcasting from here. The week after that I will be traveling, and it will be yet another one of our adventures together to see where it is and from whence and with whom will I be broadcasting. But you can be sure that no matter where I am, that some of the regular features will be included, and some of the there will be new material, and it will be conditioned by wherever it is that I happen to be. My final note here is another one of caution about the South China Sea. In the last 2 weeks, the Chinese Coast Guard, white with a slash on the side, and the words China Coast Guard painted on the side, have attacked with water cannons the resupply vessel from the Philippine Navy that has gone on to the Spratly Islands to resupply the old derelict LST that the Philippine government grounded there to establish a presence on those islands. I tell you this because in all of the developments that are going on in the Middle East, there are other areas of the world about which we need to be paying attention. The South China Sea is one of them, and of course the Arctic always is another. We've come once again to the end of our time together today, but certainly not the end of our time together up in the captain's chair next week. This is your Captain Joe. As always, I am on station and watching properly. And I am going flying with Captain O'Brien right after this. And I have offered to train Captain O'Brien in the selection of ditch headings should it be necessary to put the aircraft down on the water. I am not in a position to train him as to how to get an aircraft down into a tree. He's already done that. But we are going flying together, and I am just delighted to be able to spend some time with my friend. So with that, this is your Captain Joe on station, watching properly. And as always, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.